Blog Talk Radio. Today is Sunday, March 26, 2017, and this is Foxology. I am Silver Ray Fox, your host. Thanks for tuning in and listening today. I surely appreciate you. I do. It's a good day, isn't it? Maybe the sun is shining where you are. If not where you are, you know what? It's shining somewhere. Yep, it's out. Bright and shining somewhere, even if you can't see it outside your own window or your door. And you know what? Life is like that. And sometimes, you know, days can come where it looks dreary and overcast and cloudy. You know, we always make some comparisons to the weather and life, and it's true. But you know what? If we can look inside our own hearts and, you know, take a real close look on the other side of our thoughts. A bright idea can often burst through. A clear thought can come to mind and push those cloudy feelings out. You know, you might see or hear something that brings out the sunny attitude that was buried beneath the thick overcast feelings. And sometimes discouragement, despair, I know how you feel. Yeah, I do. Yep, like I said, it's kind of cloudy sometimes outside, inside, but the sun is shining somewhere, and the same applies to you on the other side of your thoughts. The sunny side of you can break through. In fact, it's already in you, trust me. What sometimes impacts us in a negative way is some of the hard and horrible experiences we faced as children and even as adults. And those experiences can dull our perspectives in life, and the last thing we're able to see is some sunshine. But as I said, it's there. My guest today can attest to that, that you can find a brighter life, an important cause, a worthwhile purpose, even when you've been challenged at an early age. Sometimes it gets in the way of having a positive life, but not in this case. She's a true warrior, a champion, an encourager, living her purpose out loud, helping girls and women find their sunshine after overcoming one of life's very difficult challenges. She's Lolita G., founder of Lolita's Living Room and Black Woman Heal Day that's coming up next Saturday, April 1st. I'm pleased and excited to introduce to you all Lolita G. Welcome, Lolita.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, I'm glad to have you, of course. You're doing such important things. Particularly wanted to make sure we got you highlighted, and maybe you planned it that way because it's Women's History Month, and there's been so much celebration of the things that women are doing around the world. So I'm happy to be able to talk about this. It's one of those subjects that's for sure a very difficult, challenging one. And I know a lot of times people have very hard time talking about it. And I certainly do understand why. But I'm glad that you have been brave enough, courageous enough to allow your life and this part of your history to be put out on the stage for people to look at, listen to, learn from, grow from, and change and transform. It's very incredible what you're doing. So I commend you and thank you so much for taking the time to be here on a Sunday afternoon. You know what?
Absolutely.
I want to do?
Thank you for those beautiful words.
They're all true. What I want to do, I don't want to miss anything by asking questions in the beginning. You have a pretty startling, special story, and I want you to tell it. So would you go ahead and share with the audience where this journey began for you, and just take us through a play-by-play, and then we'll get to the point. We'll talk about how some of those things impacted you.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, I was born in Chicago, and my family moved to Wisconsin because my mother wanted to go back to school. And at the time, her boyfriend moved with us. And they got together, I think I was younger than two. I want to say maybe I was about 18 months. And so the only father figure I ever knew was this man who she later married. And I was a daddy's girl. I would follow him absolutely everywhere. I adored him. I trusted him. He was a great provider. You know, we had everything that we needed, some things we didn't need. Christmas was an overabundance of gifts. And, you know, I had a good life. And probably when I was about 6 years old, I can remember he at the time had become my stepfather, had asked me to take a nap with him. And I don't recall that seeming odd to me for any reason until I woke up from that nap and he had me laying on top of him in a very sexually provocative way. And I can remember we were in he and my mother's bedroom, and I remember him telling me at that moment, "Don't tell anyone." And he first told me that it wasn't sex, but it was a sexual that I knew could understand at six. And there were something, two things that happened to me in that moment. One was that there was a sense of relief that I did not have to talk about this, that I did not have to tell anyone. Because the second thing that happened to me was a deep sense of shame that immediately took over. I felt dirty, bad, wrong. I felt like I was in trouble. And secrecy at the time seemed like it saved me from having to face that darkness to tell my mom. I thought she'd be mad at me. I thought people would look at me differently. And so that was the beginning of many years of secrecy that went on as the sexual abuse began to progress over the years as I got a little bit older. And definitely, you know, looking back, I can see where I had personality changes. My school performance changed. I had to go into special education. I had a really hard time going to school because my anxiety level was so high. It was really difficult for me to leave the house, even though my home was the source of my anxiety. And I can remember when I was in middle school, and I started middle school really young. I was like 10, 11. And I can remember I would be so full of shame that I would walk down the halls of my school if I was going from one class to the other with my head down and close to the wall because I felt every time people looked at me that they could see the dirtiness, they could see the stains on my soul, on my body. And I can remember one afternoon my stepfather had asked me to go for a car ride with him. He was running an errand of some sort. And I knew what that meant because he would often abuse me in the car when I would be with him alone. And that day I just said, no, I'm not going to do it. I had began seeking a relationship with God again at a very young age. I needed something. And my grandmother was this pillar of faith in our family and often talked to us about the love of God, the forgiveness of God. And I thought that I needed a refuge. And the more I sought God, the more I began to have a different level of guilt, like I was committing adultery. And I can remember just making the decision that I couldn't do it anymore. You know, my stepfather would come and he'd wake me up in the middle of the night. He worked second shift, which meant that he would often come up into my room after work at 11, 12, 1, 2, would wake me up in the middle of the night, which was no wonder I had such a difficult time going to school. I was exhausted emotionally and physically. But this day I had had enough. And I refused to go with him. And my mother asked me why. She said I had a look on my face. And I said, he keeps messing with me. I had no intention that day on telling her anything. And even with the years of abuse, it's like this mountain was there, but only the tip would show. And all I could say, the sum of years of abuse was he keeps messing with. Called him into the house and she confronted him, which to any mothers that are listening out there, never do that. She confronted him in front of me, which was a very terrifying experience. And he denied it. And something rose out of my belly. The years of silence and shame and secrets rose out of my belly. And I said, yes, you have. Yes, you have. She kicked him out. She comforted me. And I, for the first time, felt like I was safe. Some months later, he had taken up residence someplace else. Some months later, my mother came and she sat down with me. And around the time when I told, she asked me if I wanted him to go to jail, if I wanted to tell the police. But then also told me that if he went to jail, the family wouldn't have that income and we wouldn't be able to survive without it. So several months after he moved out, and as I look back, trauma has destroyed so much of my memory. So I don't remember how long it was. She came and she said, look, we can't afford two households. You know, George has his apartment over there, and we got the house payment, so he's going to have to come back. But I promise you he won't mess with it. I disappeared that day and realized that what had happened to me didn't matter. I had no choice in the matter. What was I going to say? My family can't eat because of me. My family can't have a place to live because of me, because I'm afraid to live with this man. And it wasn't that he used threats to intimidate me, as many, many abusers do. He knew I loved him, and he used my love for him and my love for my mom and my family against me by keeping me silent. It would kill your mother if you told her, you know, you can't tell the family, I'll get in trouble, I'll go to jail. You know, all of these different things. And she let him come home. And he lived with our family from the age of about 11 until I was 19, when one night I went to sleep and everybody was looking for George. Nobody knew where he was. His car was outside. So we just went to bed, and probably like 12 in the night, and I hear a rumbling in my closet. And all this time, from 11 to 19, I always felt subconscious. I felt like my body was betraying me as I began to develop into a young woman. As my hips spread, as my breasts grew, I felt like my body was making me more and more at risk. And I always felt like he was watching me. And so this night, I go to sleep, I hear this rumbling, and I wake up, and he emerges from my closet. And he had been in there servicing himself. And I realized in that moment that I might have been crazy, but I wasn't mistaken, that all those years that I felt like this man was stalking me in my own home, he had been. And then I started thinking about all the times he had disappeared and we didn't know where he was. How many times had he been in my closet? How many times had he been standing over my sleep body? You know, that day, I went to my brother's room at this time. He had known about it. I told him probably when I was about 15, 16. And that day I went to his room and I told him what happened. And he ran out of the house after my stepfather with a hammer. Thank God he did not catch him. My brother, who is now a pastor and does prison ministry, would have been doing it from the inside. And so after that, for many years until sometime after I got married, I was about 25, from like 19 until about 25, my mother continued to try to reconcile with him. And it took me many, many years, and probably when I became a mother myself, where I just had a break. I had my daughter. I was looking so forward to being, you know, to having her there, to bringing her into the world. And I was going through postpartum depression, and I had like some of the worst kind, where I was thinking about killing myself. I was thinking about killing my daughter. I had to fight these thoughts of harming her, and I didn't understand what was going on, but it was this perfect emotional and physical storm of hormones and trauma and fear and anxiety that all kind of clashed together. And I had a deep come to Jesus moment where I realized that if I didn't change some things in my life, that I wasn't going to make it. And that was the beginning of my journey of realizing how far from who I really was my life had traveled through that revelation, through that healing journey. Unfortunately, my marriage fell apart as well. And I realized that I had fallen in love and married through pain. And when we're broken and when we're in pain and we're desperate and we're needing somebody else to love us, to give us value, to define us, we often do not make the right choices for who that person is. And once we get better, unless both parties grow together, you grow apart. And that's what ended up happening to me and my ex-husband. You know, but it was all part of my healing journey to get to the declaration of I can't live like this anymore. And I can remember at one of my lowest points, I was in bed and I was thinking about killing myself. Had my son and my daughter at the time, and I thought about them and I thought, man, I can't leave them. Their dad is out of state. Who will take care of my babies? The pain will be left behind. And I made God a promise, and I said, God, I said, if you get me from this dark place, this dark pit, this desolate place, if you get me from here, I promise you that I will commit my life to pulling other women and girls out of hell. And I thought I was pretty safe because I didn't think he was going to do it, so I didn't think I was going to have to do it. But he did it, and now that's what brings me to the work that I do through the Latest Living Room, through Black Woman Heal, is I'm fulfilling that commitment that I made to God. I'm helping to pull other women and other girls out of that hell of secrets and shame to let them know that they can heal.
Yeah. Well, little lady, I wanted you to share your story as completely as you have, because I think it's so critical, and I say this often on my show, for people to hear that, you know, it's a reality that a lot of people understand other people are going through, and that there are people who have trusted God, trusted their faith, their own inner strength, understanding that there's purpose that can be on the other side of it, and you know, very much have expressed that to be the case. It's very empowering, and I can hear the sensitivity and even the great amount of pain I know you must have experienced. It's so commendable. Again, I'll say to you that you can be so open about what has happened. And it's a beautiful thing that you are now helping young girls, that you actually started this in your living room. So tell us about that, and then go into this big event that's coming up next Saturday for women who need to make, you know, get engaged with you or may know someone who you can help. So share how you started the Latest Living Room and the event.
Absolutely. So I shared my testimony after some time going down the road of my healing journey at church. And that really sparked it in other people. I had never been to a church service where someone had shared something so deep and so tragic. And I think my courage, and not that I look at myself as a courageous person, but I can at least recognize that was courageous to share that. After that time, women and girls literally started showing up at my front door And we would sit in my living room and we would cry and we would pray and I would talk and I would share my story. I would share my healing journey. And when I began to find that this wasn't something that just happened to me, but this was a call on my life to do this work, I wrote my book, my life story. I can't live like this anymore. And doors began to open for me to share and talk and to speak. And that is really what began to usher this opportunity for me to do this work. And I call it the latest living room because that is exactly where it started. And a living room is also a place where many of us feel safe, that we can talk and be the most of who we are. And so I've been doing work cross-culturally, cross-generationally with women around healing from sexual abuse with girls. And about 3, 4, or 5 years ago, I began to be a little bit more clear about my story that wasn't just about me, but that I was a survivor. My mother was a survivor. Her mother was a survivor. I believe that my great-grandmother was. And then by the time you get to my great-great-grandmother, she was a slave, and all black women who were slaves throughout the African diaspora were sexually abused, whether they were directly raped or they were forced to breed or what have you. The fact that they did not have control over their own bodies was sexual abuse. And I began to see the lack also of present-day sexual abuse services to black women, you know, blocking us in many ways if we need a cultural context through which to heal, to access healing. And I just do more focused work on black women, which birthed Black Woman Heal. And then sometime later, I decided to do this Black Woman Heal Day. And I'm a visionary, so I'm always coming up with something to do. And so the vision behind Black Woman Heal Day, which is celebrated each April 1st, which is the very first day of Sexual Assault Awareness Month, and I picked that day because black women are always last. And I said, this day we're going to be first. And so I picked that day, and in 2015, it was the first year, I began to just reach out to women about it, talk to them about the vision, and women really got it. And so the first year, we had about 40 states and 12 countries that joined us by doing something. And my motto about Black Woman Heal Day is that every black woman can do something, whether that's me calling up my sister and just doing a self-care, checking how are you doing, or doing a gathering with my daughter and her friends, or at church or community. It doesn't take a whole hoopla or circus of things, but it's about us black women taking the fact that if we don't prioritize our healing, both present day and historical trauma, if we don't make sure we prioritize the healing of our daughters and the protection of them, no one will. And so taking back our power, because when you look at women's movements, the most recent Women's March, when you look at even the Civil Rights Movement, it never was about black women. We have always been asked to join in on someone else's cause, to take a back seat on the are impacting us the greatest. But Black Woman Heal Day is about us standing in the forefront, healing by us, healing for us.
Lolita, can I have you tell women who are not familiar with Black Woman Heal Day how they can get involved in some of the things that they can do to spread the inspiration?
Absolutely. So one thing, if you're interested, you can find the Black Woman Heal Day April 1st page on Facebook, or you can email me at blackwomanheal@gmail.com. It's woman. With an A, blackwomanheal@gmail.com. And I can send you some information. I have a 7 healing conversations discussion guide that I can send out to you. So we'll be doing a lot of things on social media. But in terms of what you can do in your local city, your state, or your country is you can have your own gathering. Again, it can be a very small gathering. I have people who will do things at churches. A sister in Boston did like this coffee get together. I had a sister in Oregon do a night at a community center where the women did art. So it's really about just the gathering. What you do once you gather is not as important as gathering. So if it's at a coffee shop, if it's at a wine bar, if it's in your living room, if it's at your church, it's about creating that safe space for us to talk, to connect, to heal, to remember the strength of who we are as Black women and to celebrate that, to do check-ins, because many times, you know, we have this image of the strong Black woman. We just go, 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 go. No matter what's going on, we go. Black Woman Heal Day gives us a day to pause and be with each other and check in on each other and make sure that we're okay. And to let, you know, we're the original mothers. We are the original mothers of Africa. To let that spirit of the mother really come through us, that heals, that comforts, and that blesses. And so the beauty of Black Woman Heal Day is that the opportunities of what you can do are endless. We're looking for women to do live feed on Facebook, whether you share your story, you share inspiration, you share prayer about healing, you share your favorite quotes, or any such thing that brings attention using the hashtag #BlackWomanHeal so that we can bring everybody can search and find various folks who are doing things. There'll be bloggers and posters and things of that. And the other thing is that we use the symbol of the white flower in the hair, and I got that from Billie Holiday, who was a survivor of horrific child abuse, child sexual abuse, how she wore that signature white flower. And I see it as a symbol for Black Woman Heal because it allows us, I feel, to reclaim our femininity. It's a symbol. We are women. Ain't I a woman? Yes, you are. And it helps us to reclaim that. And so I'm also asking women to post selfies of themselves with their white flower, real or fake, it doesn't even matter, in their hair, and to post that again with the hashtag Black Woman Heal.
Okay, that sounds awesome. Well, you know what? We're almost out of time already. So what I would like for you to do, I want to thank you first of all again for your courageous efforts and how you are reaching out to women everywhere to help them overcome their issues of self-esteem and sexual abuse and relationship abuse and encouraging them to get help in the ways that they need it most. And I think the biggie here is that you really do understand a lot of aspects of what is going on inside them. And I am really happy that they have a person in place like you where they can trust their information and they can trust their feelings. So one more time, let's mention the go-to spot for them. And again, I want to thank you for being my special guest today. And I will
Absolutely.
Be definitely supporting you that day.
I appreciate that so much. So again, you can email me at blackwomanheal@gmail.com. And you can find our Black Woman Heal page. It's Black Woman Heal Day, April 1st. And you can find that. We'll be posting information up there, how people can get involved. But if you email me, I can definitely send you our 7 Healing Conversations discussion guide.
That's awesome. All right. Well, I'm going to look forward. I'm going to touch base with you again after the show today just to talk to you a little bit more about what I can post online that will be most helpful to you. But thanks again for taking the time this afternoon and being so transparent. I know you're going to help even a lot more people. God bless you, Loleta.
Thank you so much. God bless you.
Thank you so much. And thank you all for taking the time to listen this afternoon. You know, these aren't topics that are easy to swallow, but so much of life isn't. And one of the best ways that we can get through it is when we understand, support, and help each other through these times. And that's what today's show is all about. And I'm just 100% supportive of Black Woman Heal Day. So I hope you'll get on board too. If you need information, I'll post a few more links after I get off the show for you to connect with Loleta. In the meantime, again, thank you for listening. Please share this information and the show on social media with those people that you're connected with. That's how we can spread the word about anything, everything that we do here at Boxology. I'm going to look forward to talking to you again next time. Again, thanks for listening. Be good. Be blessed. Be awesome.